Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the second installment in our series, exploring what it means to yearn for Mashiach. Last week, we started the series by really trying to a certain extent, accept the fact that Mashiach is a fundamental belief of Judaism. But at the same time, we already saw that there is a certain fluidity to what exactly that demands and commands. We do have to believe in the coming of Mashiach, but we already saw it, and we are going to be recapping some of the key sources from last week for our purposes tonight. But we already saw how a variety of, there's an entire train of thought, mainly emerging from Rambam, that seems to indicate very clearly that while we do have to believe in Mashiach, we don't need to get too swept up in the details. And there are a couple of kind of questions or aspects that emerged from last week's share that I received a couple of questions about. So just one point, because again, we will be talking about Rambam for most of this evening. And the question was kind of asked, I mentioned how Rambam is the only rabbi to codify the laws of Mashiach. He's the only person to actually sit down and be like, these are the laws, here you go. And what exactly does that mean when I say that? Because there are other rabbis who do have works where they get into details about Mashiach. Shimon Dershowitz, who's not currently on the call, but maybe he'll listen on the recording another time. Hi, Shimon. So he pointed out to me that the Abarbanel has an entire sefer dedicated to, it's actually fascinating, he goes through all the Mashiach verses and he explains them. And he explains each and every single one of them and how they relate to the coming of the Mashiach. Now, first of all, there's important context, which is that Abarbanel, he's living through the, expulsion of Jews. He's trying to provide Jews with hope. He kind of writes, they are starting to question whether, in fact, Mashiach is ever coming. And so all of these various things drive him to write this book, exploring all of the various verses of Mashiach. But, that book exists does not change the fact that Rambam's the only person to codify the laws, because Abarbanel wrote a book about Mashiach, but he didn't detail all of the various laws of what exactly Mashiach will look like, or at least Rambam doesn't necessarily detail all the laws, but he weighs in on the topic. And so I think something that's just important, and there will be at some point in the near future a Shir series talking about the halachic process, because I've come to realize it's something we don't really know too much about. Stay tuned for the drash on Shabbos for more details. Unless I decide to change my drash, which whenever I tell someone my drash is going to be something for Shabbos, I then always decide to rewrite it and do something different. But when it comes to the halachic process, it's best to think of it as any given topic as an amorphous glob. What are the laws of Megillah reading on Purim? Well, there's kind of all of these various opinions out there. The job of a codifier is to sift through all of those opinions and make certain decisions. This is the opinion we are going to follow. This is the opinion we are not going to follow. And those are basically the decisions they make. All codifiers, except Rambam and Aruch HaShulchan, but we'll put him aside for now for our purposes, only ever discussed topics that were practically relevant to Jews. And so for that reason, no one ever wrote about the laws of Mashiach, because unfortunately, the laws of Mashiach are completely impractical and irrelevant for Jews living right now. We don't need to know those laws. And so codifiers never bothered with them. Rambam was the one person who's like, I'm going to codify everything. And so he is the only person we have who has really gone through and not just attempted to explain or not just articulated a position on Mashiach, but actually made decisions. This is true. This I'm not going to follow. This opinion is the one I'm going to grant the greatest weight to. It's one thing to just have opinions on Mashiach. It's one thing to just, I'm going to explore all the prophecies relating to Mashiach. It's another thing to make the decision of what actually is going to count and what is not. And so Rambam, what makes Rambam significant is the fact that he's basically the only person who truly does that. Which brings us to tonight's shiur. Because tonight's shiur was not, when I was first thinking about this Shir series, I never intended for what we will talk about tonight to be part of what we would talk about, because the second you start to analyze Rambam just ever so slightly more than we did last week, it starts to get a little bit more complicated. I had to give myself a little bit of a pep talk when writing this shiur last week, that it's time to grapple with Rambam's opinion on Mashiach. Because even though we saw it last week, and we're going to kind of double down on a lot of it, on a lot of it this week, what we're also going to see is that Rambam's opinion on Mashiach has been a tremendous source of confusion. And it's not because he himself is ambiguous, but his writings nonetheless lend themselves to an ambiguous interpretation. What we're going to realize, the madness of what we are going to grapple with tonight, is the fact that despite Rambam's very clear statements about Mashiach, or what we think are very clear statements about Mashiach, they actually became treated as the exact opposite. And so all of that's a little bit vague. And so I you know, tonight we will make things a little bit clearer. But first we have to, once again, recap a little of the sources we saw last week when it comes to Rambam's opinion. So at this point, as I share the source sheet, so everyone can now see, and again, these first two sources are the same sources as last week. So the first was the Ani Ma'amin, Ani Ma'amin Be'emunah Shleima B'Viat HaMashiach, I believe in perfect faith the Mashiach will come, B'Av Al Pisha Yitmameah, Im Kol Ze'ach HaKelo B'Chol Yom She'avoh, even though he's taking a while, doesn't matter, I'm not losing faith. And the way Rambam actually formulates this slightly succinctly is the wrong word. The way Rambam formulates this slightly more tightly, HaMelech HaMashiach atid la'amod ol hachzir malchut David liyoshna lememshala harishana. In the future, Mashiach will arise. He will renew the Davidic dynasty, restore it to the to its initial sovereignty. Uvone HaMikdash umkabet zinchei Yisrael. He will build the Beit HaMikdash. He will return, gather the dispersed Jewish people. V'chozrin kol ha'mishpatim b'yamav k'shehu mikodem. Everything will go back to how things were. All the laws will go back to how they were. Makrivin korbanot will offer sacrifices. V'osin shemitan v'yovelot k'chol mitzvatam ha'mor b'Torah. Will observe all of these Torah laws that we currently don't observe. V'chol misha eino ma'amin bo. And anyone who doesn't believe this, or misha eino mechakel v'yato, or anyone who doesn't yearn for his coming, Lo b'shar neviim bilvad, who kofer, is not just a heretic, does not just deny the words of the prophets, Ela b'Torah uv Moshe Rabbeinu, but also the Torah and Moshe. So that's the fundamental law of Mashiach. You have to believe in him, and if not, you're a heretic. He does, however, go on, and again, we saw this source last week. Va'al ya'ale al datcha shehamelech ha'mashiach tzarit la'asot otot u'moftim u'mechadish dvarim ba'olam. Don't assume that Mashiach is going to work wonders, he's going to perform miracles, or mechayei meitim, or kiyotzi b'dvarim elu, or resurrect the dead. Ein hadavar kach, that's not true. V'ikah hadvarim kachahein, shatara hazot chukeha u'mishpateha la'olam u'lomei olamim. The main thrust of the matter is that the Torah, its statutes, and its laws are everlasting. Ve'in mosifin aleihem v'logir gorin mehem. We can't add them, we can't detract them. Again, Rambam here comes very clearly and says, let's not get too carried away with what we think Mashiach can or can't do. And the final source that we saw last week, and that's why I'm whipping through these sources quite quickly, and then we'll start reading more slowly as we get to some of the other sources we didn't see last week. Source number four, V'chol elu hadvarim v'chayotze bahen, all of these things about Mashiach and the like, lo yeda adam eich yihyu ad sheyihyu, we don't know what will happen until it happens. Shedvarim stumin min etzal hanaviim, for these matters are undefined in the prophet's words. Gam hachachamim ein lahem kabbalah bedvarim, we don't have any received tradition on them. El lefi hechreya hapsukim, everyone just has to work out interpreting the verses. Olefichach yesh lahem machloket bedvarim elu, that's why there's so much dispute about these matters. We shouldn't also try to determine when Mashiach will come. Amru chachamim tipach rucham shel machshavei hakitzim. If you're going to try and calculate when Mashiach will come, Chazal said, let that person drop dead. Very, very nice, gentle words here. Ela yichakev ya'amin bichlat ha'levah kamo shebe'erenu. Or rather, just wait and believe in Mashiach, just as he has explained. It is very clear, right? All of these sources point to, as I said last week, a very, very cautious Rambam. in the process of him codifying the laws of Mashiach, he's very, very careful that people not get too swept up and not get too carried away in what they believe Mashiach will bring. You believe he's a miracle worker? No, don't get too carried away. Don't expect miracles. Don't expect him to start resurrecting the dead left, right, and center. None of these things. We just don't know. And the strongest articulation of all of this is what I didn't put on the source sheet last week, but we'll read it all now, and I'll read it slightly slower, is Rambam's statement. Again, it's actually the one just before source number 4. In source number 5, at the beginning of chapter 12 of his Hilchot Melachim, his Laws of Kings, Rambam writes the following. Al ya'ale al halev. Do not presume for a moment. Do not let it arise in your heart. Don't presume. Shebimot ha-mashiach yibatel davar min hagosh al olam. That anything about the world will change. Or yihye sham chidush b'ma'aseh bereshit, or anything like new, something will kind of change in creation. There'll be some new kind of version of creation. Ela, rather, and this is his key line, olam k'minhago noheg. The world will continue exactly as it always has done. There will be no utopian, glorious world. Everything will remain the same. And thus, Rambam says, V'zeshen amar b'Yishayahu, and given what it says in the prophet Isaiah, V'gar ze'ev im keves v'name in gedir bats, this is the famous line, the wolf will dwell with the lamb, the leopard will lie down with the young goat. I don't know if this story, by the way, is true or not, but again, this in the state of Israel, which is very much swept up in the belief in many parts of the religious Zionist world, that, you know, the state of Israel is the in some sense, the coming of Mashiach. So I think, I don't know if this story is actually true, but in the biblical zoo, they used to have a wolf and lamb that would dwell together. Only they had to keep on replacing the lamb. I'm not sure if it's true. I hope it's true. It's a great story anyway, but if it's true, it's an even better story. So how does Rambam interpret this utopian verse? He has to deal with it, right? We have an explicit verse that says the wolf will lie down with the lamb. There will be this utopia of peace. Mashal. V'chida. These words are a metaphor and a parable. Someone, if someone wanted to do, you know, really, really nerdy graffiti on the UN, where they have, you know, they a similar version, they will beat their swords into plowshares. Someone should just graffiti over it, Mashal V'chida. But as Rambam continues, he explains, Inyan Hadavar, the actual explanation of these verses, Sheyihyu Yisrael Yoshvin Lavetach Im Rishay Akum Hamshulim Kze'ev V'name. The Jewish people will dwell together with the wicked, you know, non-Jewish people who persecute them, who are likened to a wolf and a leopard. Shne'emar, as he quotes now Yirmiyahu, Jeremiah, Ze'ev aravot yishadadeim, v'namer shoked al areham, a wolf from the wilderness shall spoil them, a leopard will stalk their cities. This is referring to enemies as these very animals. V'yachzeru kulam ledat ha'emet. Everyone will return to true faith. V'lo yigzelu v'lo yashchitu. No one will steal or destroy. Ela. Yochlu dvar hamuta benachat im Yisrael. Rather, everyone will eat permitted food at peace with the Jewish people. Shne'emar v'arye kabakar yochel teven. The lion will eat straw like an ox. So Rambam takes a knife to all of these utopian prophecies about Mashiach. Don't think that literally the world will change. Nature will change. Everything will change. Wolves will no longer be carnivorous. No, it's a metaphor. It's a metaphor for enemies of the Jews are the wolves, Jews are the lambs, and fine, everyone will finally be at peace. And then Rambam just adds, V'chein kol kayotze ba'elu hadvarim b'inyan ha-mashiach. All of these other messianic prophecies, heim meshalim. They are simply metaphors. Uvimot hamelach hamashiach yivada lakol leize davar hayamashal. And when Mashiach comes, everyone will realize What's a metaphor? Uma inyan ramzubahen, and what exactly the illusions they contain? Mashiach will come, says Rambam, and we'll all be looking around and we'll be like, wait a second, none of these, you know, glorious utopian prophecies are happening. And Mashiach will be like, well, it was a metaphor, guys. Didn't you realize? You thought the world would actually change? No, it's a metaphor. Don't worry. This is Rambam's fundamental position. He's not saying, I should stress, he's not saying that Mashiach cannot perform miracles or won't perform miracles, but Mashiach doesn't need to perform miracles. Everything about Mashiach that we think teaches us something is a metaphor. And we shouldn't get too carried away and expect these glorious miracles, this utopian world to sprout forth. According to Rambam, every single thing about the world pre and post Mashiach will not change. Maybe a couple of things. Will a couple of things change? Well, we won't know until Mashiach comes. So the point is, don't expect anything to change. The world will continue just as it always has done. Olam kaminhago noheg. The world will go according to its typical pattern, its typical ways. Rambam stands as unquestionably the most rational of thinkers when it comes to the Mashiach. He doesn't have any patience for calculating when Mashiach will come. He doesn't have any desire to interpret any of these biblical verses in any way other than a metaphor. And, you know, I think we've talked about this before in other contexts. Rambam likes reading things in Tanakh as metaphors that he doesn't like them. If Rambam can't explain them philosophically, it's always a metaphor. The best known example, God having physical body parts. No, it's all a metaphor. Angels, it's a dream. They're not real. Creation story. He raises the possibility that, oh, if it were to be proven that the creation story never took place, it's a metaphor. Rambam is very happy reading everything as a metaphor that he needs to, and he includes Mashiach within it. Let's not get too carried away. Fine. There's a really, really good example of just how clearly non-miraculous Rambam sees Mashiach by comparing his views to other people. Because right now, when we're kind of, again, because Rambam's the only person to systematically write about Mashiach, it's hard to really compare and contrast him to other thinkers. But one perfect example is the question of building the Beit HaMikdash. So when Mashiach comes, how will the third Beit HaMikdash be built? Rashi, to the Gemara in Sukkah, source number 6, offers one of the most famous answers. Aval Mikdash Ha'atid, when it comes to the future Beit HaMikdash, She'anu Mitzapin Banoi Umshuchlal, which we yearn for being, you know, fully built and completed, glorified, Hu Yigale V'Yavo, Mishamayim, got very confused for a second because this is the problem when you insist on using the Rashi font for Rashi, then you're like, wait, what is that word again? Mishamayim, it's a key word. It was a very obvious one, but took me a second. It does not bode well. Hu yegale v'yavo mishamayim, it will emerge complete from heaven. Shne'ema mikdash Hashem konanu yadecha, we say in Shirat Hayam, the song the Jewish people sing after crossing the Yam Suf. Your hands established the Mikdash, the sanctuary. Rashi says this is proof. Then in the times of the third Beit HaMikdash, what will happen? Angelic chorus, clouds part, and the Beit HaMikdash just descends from the heavens fully built. It's a very miraculous, utopian is the wrong word here, but it's a very kind of miraculous, interventional, if that is even a word, depiction of Mashiach. How Mashiach will come and God, the clouds will part and the Beit HaMikdash will descend. That is Rashi's view. It's a very, very well-known view. And as you can imagine, very clear, very, very against Rambam. Rambam was just saying, we're not going to witness miracles. We're not going to see all of these great and glorious things happening. No, everything's just going to happen normally. And indeed, we already read it, but we will, you know, as I scroll up very quickly once again, if we take a look at source number 2, what did we read? What is one of the things the Mashiach will do? Uvoneh HaMikdash. He will build the Beit HaMikdash. In other words, it's not going to descend from the heavens. There's not going to be any great and glorious miracle. Instead, Mashiach is going to walk out with a hard hat and he's going to have a straight edge and a square. That was the word I was looking for, a square. He's going to have a Ryobi tracksaw on him and he's going to just start building the Beit HaMikdash. Rashi says, miracle? Rambam says no, because everything we've seen in Rambam is, don't get swept up by miracles. Don't become obsessed with them. Stop focusing on them. Miracles ain't going to happen. The Beit HaMikdash will be built naturally by Mashiach, not going to descend from heavens, whereas Rashi is the kind of the perfect counterexample of how everyone else basically thinks. No, Mashiach will be miraculous. So Rambam is insistent that Mashiach is not some miraculous force. Another really interesting observation of Rambam is that in his Mora Nevuchim, in his Guide of the Perplexed, he basically doesn't make any reference to Mashiach. And that's not because he's questioning Mashiach, but he sees Mashiach as the Messianic era as a metaphor. And so in his Mora Nevuchim, where he's talking about such things, this is the one we're about to read, is the one place in his Mora Nevuchim where he says something not messianic, but where he says something in the orbit of, he invokes a Mashiach prophecy. Rambam writes the following, source number 7 is Mora Nevuchim. Just as a blind man, because of the absence of sight, does not see stumbling, being wounded, and also wounding others, because he has nobody to guide him on his way. The various sects of men, every individual according to the extent of his ignorance, does to himself and to others great evils from which individuals of the species suffer. So Rambam's explaining people hurt each other because it's we're all metaphorically blind when it comes to basically knowing how to interact with others. If there were knowledge whose relation to the human form is like that of the faculty of sight to the eye, they would refrain from doing any harm to themselves and to others, right? If we could truly see, we wouldn't do the things we do. For through cognition of the truth, enmity and hatred are removed, and the inflicting of harm by people on one another is abolished. It holds out this promise, saying, and the wolf shall dwell with the lamb. The Mashiach prophecy, which Rambam told us, we saw it in source number 5, it's a metaphor, it means the Jews and their enemies will get on well. Rambam then uses that in Mora Nevuchim to make an even broader point. The world needs to come to a stage where people are no longer essentially cruel to one another, where the metaphorical wolf can lie down with the metaphorical lamb. This is the closest Rambam gets in his Mora Nevuchim to anything close to a reference to Mashiach, because he didn't think Mashiach was philosophically worthy to consider. You have to believe in Mashiach, says Rambam. It's a fundamental truth. But that's it. Don't worry about anything else. So much so that in the Guide of the Perplexed, the closest we get is a metaphor, is seeing the Messianic verses as the very metaphor he thinks we should read them as, for a world in which people just now get on because the truth has been revealed to them. All of this is to say, and to really, really, actually, first let's read source number 8, because this is someone else saying this. It is as if Maimonides were to say, I believe in the Messianic days because I have been commanded to do so by the Torah and tradition. Right? Rambam thinks you need to believe in Mashiach. You have to. That's it. Case closed. Nothing else. Don't worry about Mashiach. Don't obsess about Mashiach. At that point, I think at this point, we've all been thwacked over the head with. So you may wonder why I introduced this shiur by saying that trying to wrap our heads around Rambam's perspective on Mashiach is incredibly difficult. And it becomes a little bit of a challenge. It's always something I've kind of avoided trying to grapple with. When Rambam seems so obviously clear-cut. And the answer is that Rambam doesn't do himself any favors whatsoever. Both in all the stuff we have been reading, he leaves a giant gaping theological hole that he ostensibly never saw coming, that has been very much taken advantage of by many people throughout Jewish history. But before we get to that issue, there is even within Rambam a reason to start questioning what exactly he was articulating when he articulated the views of Mashiach. As I scroll very quickly now back to source number 3, I drew your attention last week to the ellipses. So Rambam says, don't worry that Mashiach, don't assume Mashiach is going to work wonders, he's not going to perform miracles. Nope, it's not true. What are in these ellipses? What's in these ellipses is source number 9. How does Rambam know? And you can see the copy and paste of the title still says 3 on the English side, but it's source number 9. How does Rambam know that Mashiach doesn't have to perform miracles? This is what's written in the ellipses. Shaharei Rabbi Akiva Chacham Gadol Michachmei Mishnah Haya. Rabbi Akiva was one of the greatest rabbis of the Mishnaic era to have ever lived. V'hu haya nosei kelav shel ben Koziba Hamelech. And he was one of the major supporters of Bar Koziba or Bar Kochba, and he declared him V'hu haya omer alav shehu Hamelech HaMashiach. And he declared him Mashiach. Bar Kochba, who led a rebellion against the Romans, Rabbi Akiva said he was Mashiach. V'dimahu v'chol chachmei darash shehu Hamelech HaMashiach. And everyone agreed. All the sages, I'm emphasizing that for a reason, I'm not just being strange. All of the sages believed Bar Kochba was Mashiach. Everyone agreed. No one disputed. No one disagreed. Everyone agreed with Rabbi Akiva Bar Kochba was Mashiach. Ad shenaharag ba'avonot, until he was killed because of his sins. Okay. Kevan shenaharag nodalahem she'enor. Once he was killed, they realized, hey, if you die, you don't qualify as Mashiach anymore. It should be stressed. Important Jewish theological point, as crucial to internalize 2,000 years ago as it was nowadays, if you die, you're not Mashiach. But Rambam points out, right, all the sages agreed, Bar Kochba was Mashiach. V'lo sha'alu mimenu chachamim, lo ot v'lo mofet, and yet not once did they ask for some sort of miracle or sign. So Rambam draws attention to Bar Kochba being supported by not just Rabbi Akiva, but all the sages, in order to prove that Mashiach doesn't need to work wonders, because Rabbi Akiva, all the sages, who all of them believed Bar Kochba was Mashiach, and yet none of them asked him for a sign. There's a problem with Rambam's statement here. Rambam is emphatic. I think that I've made it pretty clear. All the sages supported Bar Kochba, agreed with Rabbi Akiva that Bar Kochba was Mashiach. It's just not true. Source number 10. The Gemara in Sanhedrin. Bar Koziba Melech Tartin Shanin Upalga. He ruled. Bar Kochba ruled as king for 2.5 years. Amar Lehu L'Rabbanan. He said to the sages, Ana Mashiach, I am Mashiach. Amrulei, they said to him, B'Mashiach Ketiv Demorach V'Da'ir. When it comes to Mashiach, the test of Mashiach is he has to smell and judge. Do not ask me what that means. We don't need to understand what that means for this story. I don't know. But Mashiach apparently can smell and judge. Nachzi anan imorach v'dayin. Let us see if he can do these two things. Kevan dechazihu delo morach v'dayin. When they saw he could neither smell nor judge, katluhu, they executed him. Rambam told us all the sages agreed with Mashiach with Rabbi Akiva that Bar Kochba was Mashiach. Gemara in Sanhedrin says no. Actually, the sages themselves executed
Some commentators walk back this extreme phrase of execution, but they, you know, or they see it as the Romans executing him. But the point is, we clearly have dissent among the sages. And the Yerushalmi, in source number 11, Tani Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai. Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai taught the following. Akiva Rabbi Hayadoresh. Rabbi Akiva would preach the following. He would expound the following. Darach kochav mi Yaakov, there appeared a star out of Yaakov. Darach koziba mi Yaakov, he would read it as there appeared koziba, a reference to Bar Kochba, as Yaakov. Rabbi Akiva kad hava chami bar koziba. When he saw Bar Kochba, hava amar, he would say, Deidu malka Mashiach, this is Mashiach. Amar le Rabbi Yochanan bar Tarta. Rabbi Yochanan ben Torta responded to him, Akiva, Ya'alu asavim bilchayecha, grass will grow from your jaws, va'adayin ben David lo yava, and that Mashiach will still not yet have come. Clearly, there is disagreement with Rabbi Akiva. Why? Why is Rambam, who is so clearly and obviously and unambiguously hyper-rationalist, for want of a better expression, about Mashiach, and so loath to declare anything with too much confidence about Mashiach that isn't, it's all a metaphor and we know nothing? Why is he here so insistent in almost telling a counter-history about Bar Kochba by declaring that all the sages agreed with Rabbi Akiva that Bar Kochba was a Mashiach? He invites us into a certain level of messianic speculation that otherwise would never have existed, because he basically throws the entire rabbinic weight behind Bar Kochba at first. He grants credence to the theory that Bar Kochba was Mashiach when you would think the opposite. You would think what Rambam would want to say is, I look at even Rabbi Akiva, the greatest of all the sages, even he fell prey to this messianic thought, because he thought Bar Kochba was Mashiach. Everyone else disagreed, and look what happened. They were all right. And yet instead, Rambam is determined to kind of tell this other version of the story, which seems to, if not contradict explicitly, then at least not gel well with his actual belief in Mashiach. So the truth is that there are a lot of interesting answers, one of which I like. I'm not sure how ardently I would declare this answer, but I think it's a nice answer, is there is a certain element here of Rambam, quote-unquote, protecting Rabbi Akiva. He doesn't want to besmirch Rabbi Akiva. So Rambam will actually almost bend over backwards on his own philosophy of Mashiach. He'll tweak it slightly. He'll bend it slightly in order to allow Rabbi Akiva to not be the lone, you know, rabbi who got a little bit swept up in Mashiach. Right now, if all the sages are equally guilty, then Rabbi Akiva is not unique for his messianism. So all of this is to say that in this particular instance, Rambam kind of flips his entire messianic thinking, or at least he doesn't take the route we would take, which is use Rabbi Akiva as a cautionary tale in order to protect Rabbi Akiva. We don't necessarily learn so much about Rambam's view of Mashiach from this story about Rabbi Akiva as much as we learn Rambam's view of Rabbi Akiva in how he uses it in Mashiach. Nonetheless, there is another major issue with Rambam. Because the way I've explained Rambam until now, well, is exactly how he wants to be understood, as I dramatically scroll up the sources just to kind of look at them once again very, very briefly. Mashiach won't perform miracles. He won't do any sorts of glorious things. The world won't change in any way. There will be nothing new under the sun. Everything will remain the same. Chill out. Stop worrying about Mashiach. Stop thinking about Mashiach. You won't know Mashiach has arrived until he has done. And so, You can imagine, right? Imagine if tomorrow someone walked into Shul and was like, I'm Mashiach. Well, the way we want to read Rambam is to be like, well, you know, we don't want to get too swept up in the whole Mashiach thing. The problem is, if Mashiach doesn't have to perform miracles, if Mashiach doesn't have to change the world, resurrect the dead, or do much at all, the barrier to claiming you are Mashiach is now a lot lower. Rambam's view on Mashiach makes perfect sense in countering any Christian notion of Jesus as the Messiah, right? Oh, look at all the miracles. You put, miracles. Oh, he resurrected. We don't care about that. Look what he did. Not. It's all nonsense. Mashiach doesn't have to do any of that. Right? Rambam lived in a world where messianic pretenders wove wonders and performed miracles. And so Rambam's entire theology of chill messianism, don't worry about it, don't think about it, assumes the messianic pretender is claiming to do all of these things. But what if it's the opposite? What if the messianic pretender is not really doing much at all, but still is insistent that they are Mashiach? Their followers believe this person is Mashiach. The fact that they are not performing miracles is the greatest proof they could use to indicate that their Mashiach is Mashiach. The best example of this, and this is the final source on the source sheet, but there's more to say, is taken from, so it's the article, David Berger. David Berger is a fascinating guy. He is a professor at YU, really, really just wonderful human being. He was the person who, when I, you know, I don't think you really had to like have an interview to get into the Bernard Revel Graduate School of Jewish Studies, but he was the dean at the time. So he was the person I had to meet with for some bureaucratic reason. Like, I think it was like getting accepted into the program or one of those kinds of things. Really, really nice guy. I also took his class on messianic movements, which wasn't as exciting as we all hoped it would be. But David Berger is a very, very big, he writes about a lot of things, but he's very into messianic movements. And so he quotes in this article here, Natan of Gaza. Natan of Gaza was the chief disciple and prophet of Shabtai Tzvi. Shabtai Tzvi, the most famous of all the messianic pretenders of the Jewish world. We are completely ignorant of the shockwaves Shabtai Tzvi sent throughout the world. People believed he was Mashiach. Great rabbis believed he was Mashiach. There are controversies about whether great rabbis believed he was Mashiach, but it's almost certain great rabbis believed he was Mashiach, right? And then he converted to Islam and people, not everyone dropped their belief that he was Mashiach. I once heard it said by someone who really, really knows these things, that to understand the influence Shabtai Tzvi had, the last remnants of Sabbateanism, the belief that Shabtai Tzvi was Mashiach, were wiped out by the Holocaust. That's how long it lasted. Even in the 20th century, this person claimed, if I was hearing them correctly, that Shabtai Tzvi's influence was somewhat enduring into the 20th century. The chief disciple of Shabtai Tzvi, in defending Shabtai Tzvi's messianicness, writes the following. Source number 12. And though we have found no hint of this matter in the explicit words of the Torah, we have already seen how strange the sages were are regarding these matters, so that we cannot fully understand anything they say in their context. As the great luminary Maimonides has already testified, their words will be understood only when the events actually unfold. Guys, you're telling me Shabtai Tzvi is not Mashiach? We don't know. Mashiach will self-prove himself. The fact that Shabtai Tzvi has not performed these glorious miracles, the fact that Shabtai Tzvi has not risen people from the dead, has not changed the world, has not turned water into wine, no one said he had to. No one said Mashiach needed to. It's exactly what Rambam thinks. There's absolutely no requirement whatsoever, says Natan of Gaza, for Mashiach to do anything other than say, hi guys, I'm Mashiach, and then the rest will be revealed in the course of time. David Berger points out elsewhere in this article that one of the main opponents of Shabtai Tzvi had to like do mental cartwheels trying to explain how Rambam did not support Shabtai Tzvi. You couldn't read Rambam to support Shabtai Tzvi. But the reality is, as David Berger kind of points out, if Rambam had never codified his laws of Mashiach, Shabtai Tzvi would have had far less sources to support himself. What Rambam's theology ends up doing is supporting messianic pretenders. And this is what's so hard about Rambam. Because you read Rambam, oh, he's very rationalist. He's not very into the whole Mashiach vibe. And yet, if you go on, if you were to try and peruse some of the major discussions by some of the modern Jewish messianic movements that believe either that their rabbinic leader, who's no longer alive, is Mashiach, or alternatively in the religious Zionist world, that the state of Israel is Mashiach, who do they quote to prove their messianism? Rambam. And if we use the example from before, I didn't actually watch it. I skimmed it. I think the term is you scrub through a video, like when you kind of like just kind of like move the YouTube video thing very, very quickly to kind of see things. So I watched a video from Mechon HaMikdash. Mechon HaMikdash is a very interesting institution. They do a lot of cool things in their museum. But Mechon HaMikdash is one of the most messianic of all the organizations in Israel. Like, they are literally building the objects to be used in the Beit HaMikdash because they believe State of Israel will bring Mashiach. Mashiach will come. And they're going to be like, we've got your pans. We've got your pans for the ashes of the Mizbeach. And he might turn around and be like, oh, they are wrong, because it turned out they didn't understand how to make them. But that'll be the only people who've actually made the various kalim, the various objects for the Beit HaMikdash. How do they justify their messianic fervor? How do they justify building all of the kalim for the Beit HaMikdash? Well, Rashi may say it's all going to descend from heaven, but Rambam says otherwise. It's all going to happen naturally. Mashiach will build the Beit HaMikdash. But you know what? If he turns up with his hard hat and his Ryobi circular saw and his square and all these other things ready to build the Beit HaMikdash, and there are a group of contractors already there being like, we've done part of the work, he's going to be thrilled. Mashiach will come naturally, says Rambam, in a bid to deter, push off all of the messianic speculations surrounding miracle workers. But in doing so, he opened the Pandora's box of naturalistic messianism. If you believe someone is Mashiach and they're not performing miracles, it's exactly how Rambam said it would happen. If you believe that the state of Israel is Mashiach, you use Rambam to support you. If you believe the Rebbe is Mashiach, you use Rambam to support you. Because his very anti-messianism becomes the greatest support possible to messianic movements. And this is the grand irony. You read Rambam, and it is clear, I would argue, though admittedly everyone always brings their biases to the text, right? But it is clear that Rambam is very much trying to diminish messianic enthusiasm, messianic fervor. He's very much trying to reduce this intense belief in Mashiach. And yet the people who are filled with messianic fervor, the people who have the most intense understandings of Mashiach, use the same Rambam because he becomes inherently ambiguous. Encountering one depiction of Mashiach, he ends up justifying the creation of another image of Mashiach, one he would never have in a million years thought would have arisen. But the very Mashiach that nowadays most modern Jewish messianic movements point to, be it of less interest for our purposes, those who believe the Rebbe is Mashiach, and of more interest, those who believe the state of Israel is Mashiach, it is these very statements of Rambam that they point to. Next week, we will take a look at what exactly are some of the alternative definitions of yearning for Mashiach. Because as I kind of explained last week, and we kind of left it for last week, because this was an important idea to convey, but it's kind of a little bit of a sidebar to our main discussion, but an important one, because you can't wade into any discussions of Mashiach without finding Rambam quoted and counterquoted. What we will do next week is we will look at different definitions of yearning for Mashiach that still find a way to reduce the messianic fervor and offer different articulations of what Mashiach, or what it means to believe in and yearn for Mashiach, before we will have a bonus fourth week where we will examine the controversy surrounding describing Israel as Reshit Tzmichat Geulatenu, the first flowering of our redemption.